Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon. And yes, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule, which will be taking place as we are airing this live here on the program at almost, it's 11 o'clock as this is airing live on the talk station. But with that small adjustment in time, good afternoon, or actually good evening to you, Tom.
Whichever it is, a good one to you.
Let's talk about the weather there in London, just out of curiosity. What's it like?
Well, at the moment, the sun is shining. 2 hours ago, we were having thunderstorms. We're supposed to have really heavy rain for the next few days. And then the sun is going to come out again.
Okay, so is this typical weather?
Oh, yeah, it goes back and forth. You know, I mean, some days it rains, some days the sun shines. It's a little bit warmer than usual. We've come to that. One of the items on the agenda is, you know, this is the hottest July on world records ever. And I think it probably, you know, is here as well.
Well, let's stick with the situation there in the UK, and particularly that for the moment, I want to talk to you about what it's like this time of year. Of course, we're chatting about the issue of weather with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. He there in London. This is a time of year when much of the European community shuts down, is it not?
Yeah, you know, in a way, it's my favorite time of year to be in London. Because there's no traffic.
Really?
Everyone has just left the city. They've gone off to their country cottages. Something like 12 million people a year decamp to Spain from Britain.
Really?
Yep. In France, of course, Paris is completely empty. It's filled, you know, just with tourists. It's very difficult to find anyone who speaks French. They've all moved to their holiday cottages in the south of France. Uh-huh. The Germans have gone to Greece and Spain. The Scandinavians all go to Spain and Greece and Italy. You know, Europe closes down. You have to remember that in Europe, it's the law that you have to have at least 20 days holiday a year.
Wow.
And most of them take it in August.
Okay, so everything shuts down. There's several questions go to this. Number one, am I hearing from you that this would be a grand time to visit Europe if you're coming from the States in light of the fact that there's not a lot of traffic?
It's a grand time if you want to come from the States and all you want to do is meet other Americans, yeah, because okay. The city's full of them.
And what about services? I mean, for example, restaurants, the wait staff, how is that accommodated?
Well, they're all working.
Okay.
You find, I'm in one of the inner suburbs called Wandsworth, about, 20-minute train ride away from Buckingham Palace.
Uh-huh.
And one or two of the cafes and businesses will shut down, but they're not dependent on the tourist industry. They're dependent more on local people, all of whom have gone on holiday anyway.
Right. That exactly. All right. Let's talk about why these selected locations. The UK, a lot of the Brits going to Spain. Why Spain?
It's hot and sunny.
Well,
traditionally much cheaper than say France.
Okay, and by the way, you say hot and sunny, where as opposed to where you are in London, where it's just going to be hot and cloudy, I gather.
Well, no, we had a record here of 101 degrees a couple of weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't say that that's completely common in Spain, but you're more likely to get 101 degrees at least a week or so every year.
Okay, and the French, where do they go? To the Riviera?
They go to the Riviera. They go into the foothills of the Alps. I have a good friend who has a house there.
Mm.
A lot of people will have houses in the country and rent apartments in the city.
Okay. Now, I want to go to the mountains here in just a moment. And you said the Germans go to Greece, as I recall.
They go to Greece and they go to Spain.
Okay. What about going north to this, to the Alps, to, as you just mentioned, we've got a lot of people here in the States that tend to do that.
There are people who do that. The former British Prime Minister, Theresa May, does spend most of her holidays hiking through the Alps.
Mm-hmm.
She quite enjoys walking through mountains. That would be, I like going to colder climates. I'm not a beach bunny myself. To me, the ideal holiday would be somewhere in the North Pole.
Right. Okay. But what about Bavaria? Some of the other countries like Poland or maybe Hungary or some of those areas.
Well, in Russia,
Central Europe.
Eastern Europe, they go to the Black Sea.
Okay.
So there's some really nice resorts on the Black Sea. Turkey is very popular. The coast of Turkey, a place called Bodrum, a peninsula, is very popular.
Okay,
a lot of people go to Israel.
Let's stop here for a moment and let's talk here for another aspect of this travel. And joining us, of course, Tom Arms. We're talking about travel on this first segment of our Viewpoints Around the World. In light of the political environment, and you mentioned Turkey a few moments ago, and the fact that there's some questions about President Erdogan of Turkey, the fact that Recep Erdogan, that he has, incarcerated so many journalists, so do the political issues sort of go away in August?
They depends on the country. I mean, for instance, a few years ago, they were having problems with Russia.
Uh-huh.
And the Russians actually put a clamp down on the number of tourists allowed to go to Turkey. it can have an impact. There are a few people who are political and will keep away from Turkey because of it. Most people, I think you will agree, are apolitical. They're more interested in sun, sea, and
whatever,
sand, and sex.
Yeah, right. Yes.
And, Erdogan doesn't really affect those things. The areas, the tourist areas, Istanbul is obviously a big tourist area, but for a lot of people, the seaside resorts are totally apolitical. They're a long way away from any political discussions, and they have special charter flights that fly directly into them only during the holiday season. They just go.
Okay, they do have special charter flights this time of year. Question,
yes.
I'm looking at
In fact, the airports are closed in the winter.
Okay, very good point. The other aspect, they're closed in the winter?
These airports that service the coast, the Mediterranean coast of Turkey,
mm-hmm.
or the Aegean coast of Turkey, are open during the summer. They take only charter flights. And they close the airports down in the winter.
Okay, this leads to another observation or a question, really. And the role of tourism in the European community and the economy, how important is this?
Oh, it's very important. Especially countries like Turkey, which are facing economic difficulties. They are extremely important.
And Greece, likewise. Okay, and Spain has had its economic problems as well. What about moving north to Ireland and things of this nature? Do the Irish as well take this? This is a major seasonal holiday as well?
Yes. Everyone in Europe, it's a major seasonal holiday.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us here on Viewpoints. And Tom, Viewpoints Around the World, of course, is as we describe it. Tom, before we move on to other items, we'll take a quick break after this question. Obviously, the topic of Brexit, but the euro. And does the euro in some ways enhance and facilitate travel and also the whole, well, yes, travel and tourism?
Pluses and minuses.
Oh.
The big plus is, of course, you don't have to change any money.
Uh-huh.
The money you buy things with in Germany is the same. So you can plan more easily. You don't have the currency charges, which mm-hmm. can be quite expensive. It's easier to draw money from cash machines and so forth. But it also means that there's a sort of uniform cost
uh-huh.
throughout Europe now.
Right.
Because everything is in euros. So, people will, it's very difficult for the Greeks. It's impossible for the Greeks to devalue their currency because their currency is the same as the Germans.
Right.
And so the idea of getting a cheap holiday in Greece because the Greek currency is cheaper is not really possible.
Okay, I think this is important. And then one final question as we prepare to go to the break. For those that are traveling, always the question is, at least from my experience, is tipping. How do we tip, and how do folks tip who are traveling in the European community? Do they tip?
Not as much as, not nearly as much as in the States.
Okay.
what is it, 15% in the States? A lot of times, most restaurants, which you will find that cater to tourists, will include a service charge in the bill.
Okay.
And there's no need to tip on top of that. And right. The service charges usually 10 to 12.5%.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. By the way, now promoting 20% gratuity here in the States. I thought you'd appreciate that.
Tom, I wonder who's promoting it.
Go figure. Tom Arms.
Not customers.
No. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Now on to the heavier issues of the day. Stay with us here right after this break with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We had quite an interlude there a few moments ago on the issue of travel. This being August and Europe, for all intents and purposes, shutting down. So there will be no international issues to concern ourselves with in the European community. Well, maybe that's not absolutely accurate. Tom, let's focus back here on the States for a few minutes. The events of the past week, I'm sure, is probably generating a lot of news there in light of the fact that, well, half of Europe, or maybe three quarters of Europe, is, and predominantly the United Kingdom, is on holiday, as you describe it. What I assume that has been the primary coverage, is what's going on in the States and the shootings both in El Paso and Dayton.
The two things that have sort of dominated headlines are the shootings and Brexit. Uh-huh. You know, those two things.
Brexit is still on the front page.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, there's lots happening.
We'll get to that in a moment. But just talk about what the coverage is and the opinions are about the United States.
Well, basically, they're shocked. I think we mentioned this last week at the end of the shooting at the Garlic Festival. There's a certain shrugging of shoulders. They really, can't quite understand Trump's speech. To say it's entirely down to violence in the media and video games.
No, not entirely.
And has nothing to do with gun control or his rhetoric.
Well, wait a second. Not entirely. And by the way, his rhetoric, what about the rhetoric of the opposition? They have, no one's clear on this, I would say.
But which one is the president? Nancy Pelosi or Donald Trump? I forget.
But wait
which
a second.
Which one's the leader of the free world? Which one is supposed to be setting the tone?
I think they should all be setting the tone. I don't think one person.
Yeah, I know, but where does the buck stop? Harry Truman said. What was Harry Truman? Oh, he was the president.
He was a Democrat too, but that's beside the point. The other issue.
No, he was the president, and the buck stops at the Oval Office.
He's the only one who said that all along. Let's go back to the issue of.
Oh no, Boris Johnson said the same thing.
Let's talk. And by the way, talking about rhetoric, even the rhetoric within the European community has gotten a little edgy as well. Let's talk here about the attitude related to violence, and that is, he brings up a very good point, and this is an issue of culture, I would argue, and I'm curious, what is it like in the European community related to, well, video games and violence on TV, and how accessible is,
go ahead, I'm sorry,
how accessible is all of this? We're such an entertainment heavy community here in the States. I don't see that in the European community.
No, you're wrong.
Oh, really? Go for it.
Yeah, no, it's just as accessible here. And in fact, I was going to suggest we sort of look at this scientifically and say, they have the same access to the same films, the same American television programs, the same video games, the same books and everything else as people in the United States have access to. So if we look at this scientifically and take laboratory conditions, right, the Europeans get all those things. What is it about Europe which is different from the U.S.?
And what is that?
And the answer has to come back is access to guns.
But wait a second. Hold on. Hold on. I appreciate that in some regards, but let's look at this insofar as the...
They also have mental illness here.
The question I have is the consumption of the product. Just because you have access to it doesn't mean you consume it. And I'm wondering...
Bear with me.
No, I would disagree with you. And if you want to be scientific about this, Tom, we won't have time today. But if you want to be scientific, I argue that many in the European community do not necessarily... indulge to such a degree that we have here in the States. I case in point, let's just use it as an example, okay? You know, the whole issue of cell phone technology and the consumption of cell phone usage, I say consumption, the usage, a high degree of usage, I question is if it's used that much in the European community. And another area, one that's been going on. Now, wait, bear with me. One other issue that has been a big concern here in the States now for going on 15 years is cyberbullying. And let's talk about that. Do you see that? Is that as epidemic? Is that an epidemic in the European community?
Yes, it is.
Is it really?
And I can tell you that there are parts of Europe which have the highest use of cell phones in the world. Scandinavia.
Okay. But do they have the cyberbullying? Do they have the cyberbullying?
Yes, they have the abuse. They have cyberbullying here. It's a big issue here.
Okay.
They have all those same things that the U.S. has.
Okay.
They just don't have guns.
We've talked about that in the past, and so that's the difference between the U.S. and, if you will, the European community, and that that is the way it is. And discussing it beyond that is futile. Nothing's going to change. I'm going to be very candid with you about that. But let's move on to the other aspect of this, and I want to talk about this in relationship to the experiences of the European community, which was at one point seemed to be almost epidemic, similar to the situation here and the shootings recently, the carnage that we've seen. And that, of course, is terrorism in the European community. That was of grave concern for a period of time. What's the feeling? What's the environment
well,
now?
There's a shift here, and it's been coming out. It's been reported by the intelligence services in the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
And very similar to what they are saying, the FBI is saying and Homeland Security is saying in the States, that there is a shift in the focus from Islamic-inspired terrorism to white supremacy, nationalist, or what we might call domestic terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in fact, in the past year, the statistics I've come across are that the number of incidents involving right-wing terrorism in the States make up 78% of all the terrorist incidents.
Mm-hmm.
Only 2% are Islamic.
Okay, so
related. Now that's in the past year.
Wait a second. Now, hold on. Wait a second. I appreciate the analysis on the United States. I want to focus for a moment on
Europe. It's
the same
here.
It is. Okay. I find it very
similar.
No question. The
focus now is shifting from the Islamic terrorism to right-wing terrorism. I suppose you could say it's a backlash against Islamic terrorists.
Okay, that would be a good description of that, a backlash possibly. My question to you then goes to the concerns related to terrorism in the European community as a result recently of analysis from Iran, results from information coming from Iran and other countries. What is the feeling now? Is there a feeling that there's peace to be had in the European community?
What, in terms of Islamic terrorism?
Yes.
Well, no, because there's no peace agreement. I mean, we haven't negotiated anything with Al-Qaeda. The problem is, I think that...
And ISIS?
I think the security services have been very successful in combating the Hydra head of Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we recently had Osama's son has been reported to have been killed. Of course, we know that Osama bin Laden is dead. So Al-Qaeda has, to a large extent, been neutralized. I'm not saying that we'll remain neutralized.
Okay.
But for the time being, it's it is neutralized.
Okay, then real quickly, we're basically seeing just a transition in focus at this point. Question for you on the issue of domestic terrorism. You know, is that predominantly, and I find it interesting, it's focused in your perspective from the issue of white nationalist. Of course, we have terrorism in Africa. We have terrorism in the Middle East as well. Question for you, this has to go to, is it unique by country? In other words, UK, France, Germany, and picking the Western cultures, by the way, Caucasian Western cultures for the moment. Is there any highs and lows, no. For example?
No, I think it's pretty – well, it's – I think the UK is fairly high because we have the issue of Brexit complicating it, muddying the waters.
Right.
But there are instances right across Europe of Muslims being attacked and people from Africa being attacked by white nationalists, whether they be Italian or Hungarian or French or German.
Okay. And of course, you see this as a part of the results of the populist movement, I would assume.
A lot of people argue that populist movement has enabled these people to basically come out of the woodwork and take it a step further than the politicians would like.
All right. Now, I think that's pretty clear. Let's talk here for a moment. I want to stay on the issue of terrorism for a quick second before we go to the break, and particularly with the United Kingdom. I saw a story recently about Russia and, of course, the Novichok incidences, and the Novichok is a nerve gas that was used to eliminate enemies of the state in Russia there that were expats there in the United Kingdom. And I'm wondering, and apparently there's some concern about the role that Vladimir Putin may have played in this. What's the feeling there? New discoveries apparently on the poisonings. What's the feeling in the UK on that?
Well, they're absolutely convinced that Putin was behind it. And a couple of months ago, you may not have noticed that Putin almost admitted it. When he said, basically, enemies of the state deserve to be killed.
Right. Right. And, of course, we know that now there's riots in Russia and in China. As a matter of fact, we'll chat about those in a moment. I say China and Hong Kong. We're going to get to that in a moment. First, I want to take a quick break. We have joining us this afternoon Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240. I just mentioned a moment ago that I wanted to touch base briefly with you, Tom, on I know that there's been unrest in Russia, and apparently there's some concern that Mr. Putin is going to have to take a heavy-handed reaction to that. We were talking about the populist movement. I want to get to that in a moment related to the UK. But you've got the situation in Hong Kong as well. And there seems to be a populist movement even within the communist countries. What's the impact of the activities in Hong Kong, where China has now troops apparently standing on the border?
No, they don't have troops standing on the border. They have troops inside Hong Kong, and they've always been in Hong Kong. There are up to 10,000 Chinese troops, all members of the People's Liberation Army, in their barracks in Hong Kong.
Mm.
And at the moment, they're in their barracks. But their commander has said that if things continue, that could change.
Mm. All right. And is there...
China has said that the protesters are, quote, playing with fire.
We've heard that description before, as a matter of fact, even with North Korea. My question for you, what's the feeling there in the United Kingdom, and particularly with the UK, having once been having Hong Kong as a protectorate, as I recall, what's the feeling?
Okay, I was just talking to someone today about that, who was based in Asia, a diplomat, and you know, I said, you know, the British would probably, if there's going to be any response to a Chinese action, the British would be expected to take the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, there won't be anything from the British.
Okay.
You know, it just, it won't be there. They decided to wash their hands of Hong Kong. They might make a few noises, but nothing more than that. He said, what can we do?
Well,
there's nothing we can do.
There's truth to that.
We are a dwarf David, fighting an oversized Goliath.
Well, this is something
Trump,
that,
by the way, said more or less the same thing.
Right.
They wouldn't do, the United States wouldn't do anything either because Hong Kong is part of China, which
right.
legally it is,
it is. Yeah.
Part of China and therefore a Chinese domestic issue.
But here's the big issue, and this segues beautifully in the next conversation, and it has to do with the economy, and we'll bring in the Brexit issue as well. The impact of the Chinese economy and its relationship with Western world. What impact do you think this would have? And, you know,
62% of all foreign direct investment in China goes through Hong Kong.
Right. 62%, better than 50% of it.
And the reason is because of the political stability, the laws, and things like that in Hong Kong. So if the Chinese sort of crack down and introduce the Chinese Communist Party laws in Hong Kong before 2047, when they're due to, that means that investment is going to dry up.
Okay. In relationship to that and the President Trump's tariffs on China and the accusation that China is manipulating its currency, which by all intents and purposes, I think they are. What impact is this going to have on the world economy? You add in Hong Kong along with the dispute between the U.S. and China.
It's already having a bad impact. And they're really worried about the currency issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking to another person about that. And their concern about currency manipulation is that if the Chinese currency drops significantly, then other currencies will have to devalue to compete with the Chinese. And so you'd have the euro, the pound, the dollar, all having to force down their currencies, devalue their currencies in order to remain competitive, which, of course, will lead to inflation on a large scale and you've got real problems.
Okay. Let's talk about that in relationship to Brexit. What impact will this have on Brexit by any chance?
Well, you know, the pound is already dropping considerably ever since Boris Johnson was elected. I can't remember what it is. It's probably about 120, 119. The other mm-hmm. day I passed a sign which said 117 to the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before Brexit, it was at 158. That is before the referendum.
Right.
So in 3 years, it's dropped from 158 to about 120. They're saying that it could drop below a dollar to the pound.
Well, that will just improve U.S. tourism.
It improves the tourism
yeah,
trade.
Big time.
You're right.
Yeah.
but it also, and it makes manufacturing or British goods cheaper overseas,
right.
But it also increases the cost of imports.
Right.
And so generally speaking, a devaluation is very inflationary.
Okay.
And so, you know, people are very concerned about the fall in the value of the pound.
Where are we in with Brexit? You've got a note here, deadlocked.
Well, deadlock. You know, Boris Johnson seems to be determined to go for a no deal. He is demanding that the EU drop the backstop arrangement, which protects Ireland,
mm-hmm.
And also basically prevents a reoccurrence of the troubles between North and South Ireland. So he's saying, you know, basically you have to drop that or we won't bother talking to you. And the EU says, we won't bother talking to you unless we keep that in.
Okay.
The agreement.
So
you've got a deadlock over that, And really, a lot of people are saying, we're going to have a no deal on the 31st of October, unless Parliament, which is generally opposed to what Boris Johnson wants to do, unless Parliament can find a way to block him.
Can they find a way very quickly? Yes or no?
We don't know.
Okay.
We're in uncharted waters. They're talking about, they're talking about the Queen becoming involved. Well, and that would be a constitutional crisis.
Okay. One quick note here, and then I want to move on to other items. I want to talk briefly about Kashmir in just a moment and India. Stock market drop, is there a grave concern associated with that in the European community, or are they just watching that?
Yes, they are definitely concerned about it because it's all tied in with tariffs, currency manipulation, everything else. I mean, yeah, there isn't much good economic news on a global scale at the moment.
Okay. Let's talk here. We chatted a moment ago about Russia. Let's talk about the Russia and Korea, and you've got the INF, and I have to bring up the topic of Iran as well. They have recently unveiled new missiles. What's happening in the with nuclear weapons and concerns?
Okay, let me just – I'm going to go on to nuclear strategy here because I think it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And remember my credentials. I wrote the Encyclopedia of the Cold War.
Right.
And basically – what's behind this, both Russia and North Korea, is an effort to drive a wedge between the United States and its allies in Asia and its allies in Europe.
Right.
Now, traditionally, they maintain that link, or so it's thought they maintain that link, by if Europe or if Japan or North Korea was attacked, then the attackers, in this case North Korea or China or Russia, would face an ICBM second strike from the United States.
Right.
Now, if the Russians have intermediate nuclear weapons and the North Koreans have intermediate range nuclear weapons and the Americans don't have those weapons in Europe or Asia, then that basically helps to sever that link, because there's that opportunity that the North Koreans could attack Asia or Japan with intermediate range nuclear weapons, and the U.S. will say, no, we don't have any intermediate range nuclear weapons to respond with, and we're not going to use our strategic missiles unless they use theirs first.
Okay.
That puts basically increased pressure on the Koreans and Japanese to do what the North Koreans want, and as I said, drives that wedge. Trump has, to a certain degree, already fallen into that trap by saying, I don't care so much about the intermediate range nuclear weapons. It's not part of what I spoke to Kim about. We are still friends.
Well, I have to question that comment about him being friends with Kim Jong-un, or for that matter, even Vladimir Putin, in light of the fact that we've had...
Well, I didn't mention Vladimir Putin.
We've had numerous sanctions on both countries. As a matter of fact, the U.S. has led the world on sanctions against those two countries and continues. And
I'm just saying what the Russians and the North Koreans are doing, and to a lesser degree the Chinese, trying to drive that wedge between the U.S. and its allies overseas.
Okay, noted. I don't think it's happening, but that's another story for another time. Let's talk very quickly, because we've got to go to a break, about Kashmir and India, and a very interesting story there. And I'm wondering, are we looking at things heating up between India and Pakistan?
We certainly are. There are protests in Kashmir by the Muslims. Mm-hmm. There are protests in Pakistan. The Pakistanis are absolutely furious. And of course, here we have two nuclear weapon states, both with about 150 nuclear weapons each.
Mm-hmm.
And they have nearly come to blows on a nuclear front several times in the past.
Wow.
Kashmir is a mess.
Right. And of course,
since 1947, the Indian Constitution has protected the Muslim minority or majority. It's a Muslim majority in India and Kashmir.
Right.
Kashmir is divided between India and Pakistan.
Right.
And both sides claim all of Kashmir.
Right. And so we're running up against the clock here. The real quick question here is there concern? Major concern?
Absolutely.
Okay.
There is big concern that this could be a spark which could lead to something very, very big indeed.
Okay, I think there's something that's not getting a lot of play here in the States, so I appreciate and recognize your note on that one. We'll take a quick break, and right after that, we're going to come back to two quick items. Hottest July on record, but the other one I'm looking forward to is a $140 million drug haul that makes an unexpected stop. We'll explain about that in just a moment here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240. Our guest this afternoon, our foreign editor, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, quick note, hottest July on record. Is this something that is being discussed, and is this big issue there in the European community?
Oh, yes. And, of course, as you know, the Europeans are very much in favor of restrictions on various things, you know, greenhouse gases and things like that, because they're concerned about climate change. Mm-hmm. And they point to the fact that this is the hottest July on record, that things like the Greenland ice cap are melting. But not only is this the hottest July on record, but the 10 hottest years on record have occurred since 2002.
Right. And by the way, on record meaning since people have been keeping records, not since...
Yeah, going back to the 19th century.
Right, okay. I think that's very interesting. All right, so there is some concern. Do you think this will become an issue of political, a political issue for the coming years in the European community?
It already is a big political issue. I mean, it's a huge political issue. Some people say it's much bigger than Brexit. You know, I mean, because it affects everyone in the world.
Well, and of course, recently Google had a big event. I think it was in Italy, an island, an Italian island, of which, 114 jets had to fly in, just to talk about global warming. All right. And by the way, was there much coverage of that?
Yes, and there was criticism too.
Okay, good.
I mean, you know, the same criticism that you noted.
It's basically a form of tone deafness among the world's elites. All right, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, always with a twist for the last segment of the program, and I'm looking forward to this. I'm kind of interested in this. $140 million drug haul, where I assume these are illicit drugs. And the participants made an unexpected stop. Let's hear about this.
Yeah, well, just imagine you're driving an Australian police car. You're an Australian policeman in Perth, and you're just driving along, and bang, someone crashes into the side of you. You jump out, and you say, what? And then you do a search of the car, and there are $140 million worth of amphetamines, illegal amphetamines in the car that it's just crashed into you. I mean, you know, it pays to be a safe driver.
Not only that, one would have to say for the police officer involved, that's a case that, shall we say, fell into his lap.
Yes.
Wow, $140 million worth of drugs. That was an unexpected stop for the mule, as we call them, those people that are carrying the drugs. By the way, what was the upshot? Was the individual just simply transporting, or were they in the process also of?
They were transporting.
Oh, just transporting. Ah, okay. Good haul for the Australian police. Tom, as always, now that this is the holiday season, where are you headed for now that I'm wrapping things up here?
This year, I'm staying in London.
A staycation, we call that here.
We had a long weekend in Wales. We're planning another long weekend in Somerset. If I'm feeling a bit better, we may go to Iceland in September. I have a good friend up there. invited to the south of France, but I don't think I can make it. And then we're thinking about a cruise next year.
Well, you see, that's one of the joys of living in Europe. You're always traveling, and it's an easy experience for you. Tom, as always, thank you for being with us, and look forward to chatting with you next week, assuming you're not on holiday.
Thank you. All right. Hopefully, I will be.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.